the 51st chapter of the prophecy of Jeremiah. And we'll read some verses from the opening part of the chapter, and then we'll read a few verses near the end. Jeremiah chapter 51 and verse number 1. Thus saith the Lord, behold, I will raise up against Babylon and against them that dwell in the midst of them that rise up against me, a destroying wind, and will send on to Babylon fanners that shall fan her and shall empty her land, for in the day of trouble they shall be against her round about. Against him that bendeth, let the archer bend his bow, and against him that lifteth himself up in his brigandine. And spare ye not her young men, destroy ye utterly all her host. Thus the slain shall fall in the land of the Chaldeans, and they that are thrust through in her streets. For Israel hath not been forsaken, nor Judah of his God, of the Lord of hosts, though their land was filled with sin against the Holy One of Israel. Flee out of the midst of Babylon, and deliver every man his soul. Be not cut off in her iniquity, for this is the time of the Lord's vengeance. He will render unto her a recompense. Babylon hath been a golden cup in the Lord's hand, that made all the earth drunken, the nations have drunken of her wine, therefore the nations are mad. Babylon is suddenly fallen and destroyed. Howl for her, take balm for her pain, if so be she may be healed. We would have healed Babylon, but she is not healed. Forsake her and let us go, every one, into his own country. For her judgment reacheth on to heaven, and is lifted up even to the skies. The Lord hath brought forth our righteousness. Come, and let us declare in Zion the work of the Lord our God. Make bright the arrows, gather the shields. The Lord hath raised up the spirit of the kings of the Medes, for his device is against Babylon to destroy it, because it is the vengeance of the Lord, the vengeance of his temple. Then coming down to verse 49, as Babylon hath caused the slain of Israel to fall, so at Babylon shall fall the slain of all the earth. Ye that have escaped the sword, go away, stand not still. Remember the Lord afar off, and let Jerusalem come into your mind. We are wounded, we are confounded, because we have heard reproach. Shame hath covered our faces, for strangers are come into the sanctuaries of the Lord's house. Wherefore, behold, the day is come, saith the Lord, that I will do judgment upon her graven images, and through all her land the wounded shall groan, though Babylon should mount up to heaven, and though she should fortify the height of her strength, yet from me shall spoilers come on to her, saith the Lord. Amen. And we know the Lord will bless the reading of his own precious word for his name's sake. Jeremiah's ministry lasted 40 years through the reign of, or the reigns of, three principal kings. The first was Josiah, who was a faithful man of God, a faithful king who sought to reform the land, to bring the land back from its idolatry, and he endeavored to establish again the worship of the Lord. And in his reign, the Lord raised up Jeremiah to call the people back to the Lord, to return to the Lord. And when you read through the prophecy of Jeremiah during that time in the reign of Josiah, you'll find that's the emphasis. It is a tender appeal from the heart of God, calling the people back, calling the people to return. That's the emphasis. Turn again to me, the Lord was saying. But then after Josiah came Jehoiakim. And Jehoiakim was a wicked king who turned away from the Lord, who cast aside the reforms of Josiah. And as a result, the message of Jeremiah brought a change of emphasis. It brought the prophecy of invasion, that Jerusalem was going to be invaded, and that judgment would come, and that the Lord would remove the people. And then we come to the last king, who was Zedekiah. And Zedekiah was an ungodly king also. And in his time, he intensified the persecution against the Lord's servant Jeremiah. And Jeremiah, of course, was cast into the prison house and then into the dungeon because of his ministry and his preaching. But in his day, in the day of Zedekiah, Jerusalem was overthrown. The prophecies came to fulfillment. They came to pass. And the people were carried away into captivity. Jeremiah lived a witness, that overthrow, the overthrow of Jerusalem, the destruction of the temple, and the dispersal of the people into exile. He himself was treated favorably by the Babylonians. He was given the choice of either going to Babylon with the exiled Jews or else remaining in the land of Judah. And he chose to remain in Judah. It was desolate. The Babylonians had destroyed the land, destroyed the crops. They had plundered the whole region. They had brought Jerusalem to the ground. It was simply a heap of rubble. And yet Jeremiah chose to remain with the few people that were still in the land of, or in the region that belonged to the tribe of Judah. His prophecies of invasion and the repeated exhortation to submit to the Babylonians brought him the allegation or the accusation of being a traitor. They said that he was one who had fallen away to the Chaldeans. But that, of course, was far from the truth. He served faithfully the Lord. And what the people said of Jeremiah was not so much a reflection on him, but rather a reflection on their own spiritual bankruptcy. They failed to recognize that Jeremiah was the servant of the Lord, delivering the message of the Lord. And so their accusation, far from questioning the allegiance of the prophet, was rather a reflection of their own spiritual condition. Now, while he exhorted submission, his last words, the last words that he prophesied, focused on the downfall of Babylon. And we've got to keep that in context. All through those previous years, Jeremiah was saying, judgment's coming, the Babylonians are going to invade, and therefore submit, submit. They put him in a yoke of wood. And one of the prophets, one of the religious leaders, took that yoke of wood off him, broke the yoke, and he said, within 2 years we will break the yoke of the Babylonians. And Jeremiah responded, in breaking the yoke of wood, in resisting the Babylonians, you'll bring upon yourselves a yoke of iron. His message was to submit, submit to the Babylonians. But while through all those years, that was the emphasis, that was the instruction, at the very end of his prophecy, Jeremiah emphasizes the destruction, the judgment that would fall upon the Babylonians. And that's what we find here in this chapter that we have read. The children of the southern kingdom, the people of the southern kingdom, would go into captivity for 70 years. But at the end of that time, the Medes and the Persians would rise up and they would overthrow the Chaldeans and Babylon would fall. If you look there in chapter 51 and verse number 63, the Lord gave Jeremiah instruction to write this judgment in a book, the judgment against Babylon. And verse 61, when Jeremiah said to Sariah, when thou comest to Babylon and shalt see and shalt read all these words, then shalt thou say, O Lord, thou hast spoken against this place to cut it off, that none shall remain in it, neither man nor beast, but that it shall be desolate forever, and it shall be when thou hast made an end of reading this book, that thou shalt bind a stone to it and cast it into the midst of Euphrates, and thou shalt say, thus shall Babylon sink, and shall not rise from the evil that I will bring upon her, and they shall be weary. Thus far are the words of Jeremiah. If you take time to read through the prophecy of Jeremiah, you'll find that not only did he come with the spoken word, but he used object lessons also. And back in the ministry of Josiah, in the reign of Josiah, the Lord told him to take an earthen vessel. You remember he was sent into the potter's house and he watched the potter make the vessel and it was marred and he broke it and then he made it again. And after that the Lord said, take an earthen vessel and go to the leaders of Judah and smash this bottle before them. He was to break that bottle to show the judgment of God. This would happen. This is what would happen if they continued to resist the Lord. They would be broken. They would be, as it were, broken as a potter's vessel. And then he used the illustration of the yoke. And then we find here this book that was tied to a stone and it was dropped into the river Euphrates. An illustration, an object lesson accompanying the message. Babylon's going to sink. Babylon's going to be destroyed. Jeremiah, because he emphasized and taught the people to submit to the Babylonians, was in no way condoning the Babylonians. It was in no way condoning what they stood for or what their lifestyle was. But rather, it was emphasizing the chastening of the Lord. And they were to submit under the chastening of the Lord. But after 70 years, Babylon would be destroyed. And so the message changes. Look at chapter 51 and verse 6. This time, instead of saying, submit to the Babylonians, when the judgment will come at the end, the message is this in verse 6, flee out of the midst of Babylon and deliver every man his soul. So, when they were still in Judah, the message was, the Babylonians are coming, don't rebel against them, don't resist them, submit. And then at the end of the exile, 70 years later, when judgment will fall on the Babylonians, the message is, flee out of Babylon. But what about the message in between? What about that time of exile? What about those years of captivity in Babylon? What was the message? Do you see the emphasis changing each time? When they were in Judah, in their sin, rebelling against the Lord, judgment's coming, the Lord says, submit to the Babylonians. Then when judgment falls on the Babylonians 70 years later, the message is, flee out of Babylon. But what about that time in between when they were in exile? What was the message? What was the emphasis? We read it there in verse number 50 of the chapter. Ye that have escaped the sword, go away and stand not still. Remember the Lord afar off, and let Jerusalem come into your mind. Let Jerusalem come into your mind. That was the message to the exiles in captivity. Let Jerusalem come into your minds. It was a command that was followed to some extent. If you turn to Psalm 137. Psalm 137. We read there what the exiles said. Verse number 1. By the rivers of Babylon, there we sat down. Yea, we wept when we remembered Zion. We hanged our harps upon the willows in the midst thereof, for there they that carried us away captive required of us a song, and they that wasted us required of us mirth, saying, sing us one of the songs of Zion. How shall we sing the Lord's song in a strange land. If I forget thee, O Jerusalem, let my right hand forget her cunning. If I do not remember thee, let my tongue cleave to the roof of my mouth. If I prefer not Jerusalem above my chief joy. This is the language of the exiles in Babylon. You can see their common sorrow. We wept. The plural is used. We wept when we remembered Zion. And yet, do you see the switch there, the change from the plural to the singular? From verse 1 through to verse 4, it's plural. We sat down, we wept, we remembered, we hanged our harps. We, how shall we sing the Lord's song? But then in verse 5, it switches to the singular. If I forget thee, O Jerusalem, let my right hand forget her cunning. If I do not remember thee, let my tongue cleave to the roof of my mouth. If I prefer not Jerusalem above my chief joy. There's an individual determination. There's a common sorrow that prevails, a common affliction among all the exiles. But there's an individual determination not to forget Jerusalem. And is that not what Jeremiah said when the exiles were departing? Let Jerusalem come into your minds. All the time that you're in Babylon, let Jerusalem come into your minds. And they heard that message. They maybe did not all apply themselves to it, but there were some who had an individual determination. The sense there of those verses, verses 5 and 6 is, let my right hand fall to my side. The hand that touches the strings, let it fall as a dead, shriveled thing before I degrade my art to make a Babylonian festival. Jerusalem must be kept in mind. And that's a spirit that was displayed by the exiles here in Psalm 137. But also if you turn to Daniel chapter 6, and that brings us now to the time when judgment falls upon Babylon and the Medo-Persian Empire rises up and overthrows the Chaldeans. And Daniel is still there after all these years. He's still there, but there's jealousy against him. And he faces a time of great trial, a trial of faith in his old age when he is forbidden to pray. Remember how they persuaded the king to introduce a law that no man could pray to any god except the king for 30 days? What did Daniel do when he heard that law? Verse 10 of Daniel 6 tells us when he knew that the writing was signed, he went into his house and his windows being open in his chamber toward Jerusalem. He kneeled down upon his knees 3 times a day and prayed and gave thanks before his God as he did aforetime. You ever wondered how the men knew that Daniel was praying? You know, when you think about it, it was really a foolish law. You know, how can you implement this law? How can you enforce it? You're making a law that no man can pray to any god, but surely men pray in secret. Men can carry on that practice in secret. This law was framed in order to ensnare Daniel. And how would they know that Daniel was praying? They knew Daniel was praying when they saw the windows opened in the direction of Jerusalem. This was his practice every day. Let Jerusalem come into your mind. And 3 times a day, Daniel set aside time to fulfill that injunction, to let Jerusalem come into his mind. Every day that he dwelt in Babylon, he was determined not to forget Jerusalem, to let Jerusalem come into his mind. That was the message of Jeremiah to the exiles in the land of Babylon. And it's a message that is application for us. Stop and think just for a few moments by way of conclusion what that action signified. That action of Daniel when he threw open the windows. That action of the exiles as they refused to give in to the requirements of the Babylonians to sing the Lord's song. What was Daniel doing? The opening of a window is an insignificant action, but in Daniel's case, he was opening the window toward Jerusalem. It was a reminder of his home. And though he could not see Jerusalem from such a distance, the direction was an indication that he was not at home while he was in Babylon. Jerusalem was his home. And is that not an illustration of what God's people are in this world and how we are to live in this world? We are pilgrims. Paul tells us in Hebrews 11, pilgrims that look for a heavenly city, just passing through. We're absent from home. This is not our home. Babylon is a foreign country. We have a new Jerusalem that we call our home. And John writes of it in Revelation 21, how we ought to read these verses continually. This is home. Revelation 21, and I saw a new heaven and a new earth. For the first heaven and the first earth were passed away, and there was no more sea. And I, John, saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down from God out of heaven, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. And I heard a great voice out of heaven saying, behold, look at this. That's the sense. Look at this. Consider this. Fix your gaze upon this. The tabernacle of God is with man, and he will dwell with them, and they shall be his people, and God himself shall be with them and be their God, and God shall wipe away all tears from their eyes, and there shall be no more death, neither sorrow nor crying, neither shall there be any more pain, for the former things are passed away. That's our Jerusalem. And that Jerusalem is the tabernacle of God, where God dwells with His people, where we fellowship with Him in unbroken communion forevermore, the new Jerusalem. And how different it is from the Babylon of this world. The Babylon of this world is characterized by tears, sorrow, crying, pain, and death. But in that new Jerusalem, there's none of these things. Let Jerusalem come into your mind. This is a reminder of our home, the new Jerusalem. But not only was it a reminder of his home, it was a reason for hope. A reason for hope. Jeremiah exhorts the exiled Jews to submit to their Babylonian captors. He says to them in his prophecy, build your houses there, marry, raise families, plant vineyards, grow crops, expect a long captivity, but live in hope. Jerusalem must not be forgotten. It must not be lost sight of. While they could not live in Jerusalem nor experience its joys, they must not lose its hope. And when Daniel opened his windows towards Jerusalem, he was revealing a spirit that the honors of Babylon couldn't destroy or diminish, a love that distance could not quench, and a courage that threatening doom couldn't shake. He reveals the kind of attitude we need to what is unobtainable in this life. As Christians living in this world, we have our Jerusalem. A life free from temptation, from sin, a life free from all weakness, failure, fear, a life free from all the influence and attack of Satan, a life of unbroken fellowship with God. That's our Jerusalem. But the Bible tells us it is above. And it's not obtainable here in this life. How then should we react? Should we blend in with Babylon? Or should we sink in despair? Should we give up? No, the message is, let Jerusalem come into your minds, though you're not there yet, though you're not in that blessed atmosphere yet. Let Jerusalem come into your mind. Open the windows in hope. This is our hope. Not only is it our home, but it is our hope. And that's how Paul viewed his life. He knew there were many things that he had not attained to. He knew that he was not what he ought to be. He was not what he would yet be in the purpose of God. But he said in Philippians 3, I'm pressing towards the mark. I'm pressing on. This is my hope. Jerusalem above. We are to live in a hopeless world with the hope of glory in our hearts. Let Jerusalem come into your mind. It was a reminder of home. It was a reason for hope. But it was also the requirement for their hearts. You see, Jeremiah uses the word mind there. Let Jerusalem come into your mind. It's a reference to the heart, the inner man. When Daniel opened his window toward Jerusalem, it not only revealed where his home was, it not only revealed what his hope was, but it also made him all the more aware of the life that was round about him. You want to close out the outside life, what do? You close the windows, you close the doors, and you shut all the sounds outside out. You shut them out. But when Daniel opened those windows, the very opposite effect took place. The sounds of Babylon came rushing in. The wagons that were passing in the street below, the traders in the market stall, the children playing, the aged who were resting in the heat of the noonday sun, mothers nursing their infant children, soldiers marching by, a laden woman carrying her goods to the market, the sound of the beggar's voice, the chant of the Chaldean priest, all those sounds came rushing in. The life around him became all the more real. But in the midst of that environment, surrounded by ungodly ways and customs sometimes hostile, he endeavored each day to focus his heart and his mind upon Jerusalem. The instruction is, let Jerusalem come into your mind. And that word let there means to open the gate. Open the gate. It's an act of duty. In the midst of this world, in the midst of everyday life with all its duties, all its demands, we are to open the gate of our heart and let the influence and the remembrance of Jerusalem into our hearts. It's very easy for the heart to be carried away, to be influenced by this world. But the instruction of Scripture is this: let Jerusalem come into your mind. Let Jerusalem above influence your heart. This is what we ought to be doing. And I think I am safe from any contradiction in saying that as Christians, I think we do not think enough about heaven. We don't dwell, or we don't sing, or we don't think, or we don't talk about heaven enough. We need that influence of the New Jerusalem all the more. As we live in this world, we're not ostracized from the world. We are not off the world, but we are in the world. And in order to avoid the influence of the world, we've got to let Jerusalem come into our minds. We've got to open the gate. We've got to open our hearts and consider the new Jerusalem, the glory of the Father's house. Let Jerusalem come into your minds. And Daniel threw open the windows towards Jerusalem, the reminder of home, the reason for his hope, and the requirement that his heart needed in an hostile world. This is the secret. This is the secret to overcoming. It's the secret to living the victorious Christian life when we let Jerusalem come into our minds. May the Lord help us to cultivate that practice and that habit of letting Jerusalem come into our minds. We should think about heaven. We should think about heaven. I get scolded because when we're planning holidays, I spend ages looking up about the place, finding out where it is, all the details, all the roads round about. And now with technology, it's great. You can Google map the thing and you get the wee man down on the road and you can swivel right round. You can see everywhere. I look at the accommodation. I want to know who's next door, what's behind me. I'm not behind some dump or something like that and all the rest of it. I like to find out every detail where I'm going. And I was thinking about that recently. Should we not be like that about heaven? That's where we're going to live forever. And we don't want to be as strangers when we get there. We want to say, I recognize that. I read about that. I read about those golden streets. I read about the tree of life. I read about the golden or the great white throne and the emerald rainbow round about. I read about it. We should acquaint ourselves with heaven and the glories of the Father's house. May the Lord help us to cultivate that practice. Let's sing another hymn before we pray tonight.